When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
The Team Never Quit podcast is sponsored by Navy Federal Credit Union. Navy Federal has every single tool that you need to dominate your debt. So if you're a military member, a veteran, or a family member, go check out NavyFederal.org for more information today.
My message is it's the same. You know, it's that word unstoppable, and then it's the fact that we all wrestle with a challenge.
Never quit radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. As always, thank you guys so much for listening and watching. And please don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button wherever you're getting this show. So I'm really excited for today's guest. But before we get into him, let's kick it off with our weekly Patreon question. And this week we've got, what is the very first thing that you do after coming home from a trip? You unpack, you just go sit on the couch, go take a shower. What's the first?
I go sit on the couch. Like, unwind. I need to unwind for a minute.
What about you?
So I got to pick him up and hold him tight.
Aw. That's a good one.
The kids?
Yeah.
Yeah. If they're there. I mean, that's absolutely the first thing is the family. And then...
You always get in the shower.
First thing I do, man, is wash off the trip. And it doesn't even matter what time of day it is either, man.
Yeah, that airport, man. I got to get that off.
Right? It's the airport. Airport and airplane. You want to wash that off. So that's the first thing I do. And then throw on, you know, house clothes.
Yeah.
100%. What's yours?
Yeah, I'd probably do the same as mom. I'd definitely just crash on the couch, put on a show, movie or something like that. Pretty simple.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
I usually like to let the trip seep in me, so I don't take a shower for a little bit.
Like to waller in it?
I like to marinate.
Yeah. That's a good question. All right, man. And thanks for coming on the show. We appreciate you doing this. In the beginning, we'd like to get into a little bit about your backstory, tell our team about where you come from and how you were raised up. So if you wouldn't mind, let's backtrack a little bit and tell us where you were born and where you were raised up.
Yes, sir. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on. It's truly an honor, and I was really excited to speak with you guys. But, you know, my backstory... I was born missing my leg, and you know, the kind of crazy thing was that my mom didn't expect it. The doctors didn't expect it, so it was a shock to everyone that, you know, pretty much my mom said that from day one in the hospital room, they were telling her a list of things I wouldn't be able to do with my life, you know, that I'd have to get taken care of the entire time. And my mom, though, she chose not to think with that same mentality, that same mindset. You know, she always told me growing up that God made me this way for a reason, and her way was to show me that everything in life was like a puzzle. You know, every single challenge I faced was a puzzle. I could figure it out. There was nothing that I couldn't do. Certain things I just needed to adjust and I needed to maneuver around, but there was nothing I was not capable of achieving in my life. So like any other kid, you know, I love sports. I love playing different things, but at 14 years old, I got introduced to wrestling and that completely changed the trajectory of my life. It completely opened my eyes to something new. And, you know, from that moment on, I was just passionate about the sport and it would take me far.
So what was it? You see it on TV? I mean, what was it that sparked that inside of you? You said you saw it, but where was that?
Yeah, so it was actually kind of interesting. I was born in California, and my cousin, who was 3 years older than me, he lived in Arizona. And so, you know, we talk on the phone, and He'd always tell him, he's like, I think you should try wrestling. I think you'd be really good at it. And he's like, you know, you're always on crutches. You're small, but your upper body's strong. He said, you're going to be wrestling guys that are your size. That upper body strength will come into play. It'd be an asset for you. And I always kind of shunned it away. I was like, no, all the way up to ninth grade. But it was right before my ninth grade year of high school. We moved from Arizona, from California to Arizona to help start a church. And so, you know, it was like July. It was hot. It was like 115 degrees out. So I didn't want to go outside. Didn't have any friends. I called my cousin up. I was like, hey, what are you doing? He's like, hey, I'm going to wrestling practice. You can come along. And so I went in there and I just remember, you know, I'm in the wrestling room. I'm on the side, like I'm curling dumbbells, just lifting weights. I'm watching them go through their tumble lines and their warm-ups. And I was thinking, it was like, yeah, this is pretty cool, but I still wasn't interested in actually trying it until my cousin came over. He's like, hey, man, just try it one time. He's like, if you don't like it, I'll never bring it up again. I'll leave you alone. And, you know, so I really just went out there on the mat to get my cousin off my back. But I remember they're going live goes. And I was like 90 pounds. I'm wrestling a guy that's 103. And he just kicked my butt left and right all over that room. And after a 30-second go, but I just remember leaving that little skirmish on the mat was just the biggest passion for me for wrestling after that. That's all I wanted to do.
Were you thinking in that moment, like ideas of how to improve?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it was funny because, you know, I came home and, you know, I was excited about telling my mom about practice today and what I just did. And, you know, I came home, I walked through the door, I was all bloody, you know, my shirt was all dirty. I was like scratched up, but I was excited about it because I was already just brainstorming and imagining my wrestling career. You know, I was replaying what just happened in the wrestling room and what I could do differently. And, you know, the whole ride home, actually, I was asking my cousin, like, what should I do when he does that? You know, what else can I learn? And it just became, really for me, it became a platform to echo my mom's words. You know, she told me, you never let a challenge become an excuse to say I can't do it. And wrestling became an opportunity to show people, you know, it's not my challenge that you need to focus on. It's what I'm capable of. It's what I can do. And so that just gave me a whole different platform to show people physically what I was truly capable of in my life.
So let me ask you this, being born with that and growing up, I thought in my perspective is the toughest part about being alive down here on earth is when you're the kid, when you're in your kid phase, because kids are mean and they point things out. When you were growing up, and I know that's tough. And what do you tell yourself? Oh, when you get up in the morning, you keep going because you have an exceptional motivation going on. And now that you're a grown adult and you've proven yourself, no one ever sees that anymore. And you're like, you don't see that you're missing legs. You're just a badass. But when you were born as a kid, man, you're not born with that. What is it? How'd you get that in you so detailed and so heavy and so hard? What impacts brought that in there?
You know, I think it was a mixture of things. You know, one, it was just that support that I had home. Treat me any differently. And growing up, it was, you know, I'm missing my leg. My brother has two legs. My sister has two legs. It's no big deal. You know, they just treated me the same. You know, when I stepped outside of the house, I struggled because people would look at me. Kids would say things. And a lot of times I'd come home just broken, you know, just frustrated and just confused. Like, you know, why am I like this? But, you know, I think along the way, and especially when I got introduced to wrestling, I had this frustration and rage in me. But I was able to channel that and use it for wrestling, you know, because as I'm in the practice room and I'm frustrated, I'm trying to figure things out, why I'm getting beat, you know, what techniques I need to learn to get to the next level. I would think to myself, you know, if I quit now, if I give up now, I'm proving a lot of people right. You know, I'm proving these people who had these low expectations of me right. And in a way, I kind of wanted to shut them up, you know, so it was a mixture of support. It was a mixture of using that negativity as motivation. And also it was just me just finally finding a purpose in my life, or at least the start of something for me, you know, a calling. I felt like wrestling was my calling to show people, you know, always just trying to find something to motivate me along the way, not just dwelling on the negative and letting, you know, it drag me down, using things to kind of give me that energy to fight a little bit longer.
Was wrestling your first passion? Did you ever have a passion like that before, a competitive passion?
Well, I loved football growing up. I know I did jiu-jitsu for a couple of years. And it was back when like UFC was just beginning. So yeah. You know, I remember like Hoist Gracie and Horion and those guys. And, you know, so I was taking jiu-jitsu in California and, you know, growing up with a bunch of boys is my sister. So a bunch of boys, my cousins were boys. So, you know, we're just roughhousing all the time anyway. So it just kind of felt like a natural thing for me. You know, I just love that physicality of it. And, you know, again, just I liked how wrestling, it's just one-on-one. You know, it's you and your opponent. It's like, you know, you got to figure it out. I mean, yeah, they might be stronger than you. They might be taller than you, more experienced, whatever. You know, no one's going to save you. No one's going to step in and say, time out. Let's put someone else in who's better. You figure it out. And, you know, I felt like it was just like my life in a way, You know, no one was saving me from people looking at me every single day. No one was saving me from the kids that were saying mean things to me every single day. I had to figure it out. I had to find a way to just to fight through it and be tough enough to handle that and then use it as fuel for myself, you know, during certain moments. So in a lot of ways, wrestling on a mat was just like me wrestling through my life. And it just, it seemed very familiar in a way, I guess.
So you said you came in high school when you were a freshman, you started that?
Yes, sir.
Talk about your coach when you came walking in there. What was that like when you're like, hey, I want to be a wrestler, I'm signing up, let's go.
Yeah, so, you know, we moved to Mesa, and the way that the school district was set up at the time, freshmen were on the junior high campus still. There's too many kids on the main campus at high school to keep them together. So my freshman year, I was on the junior high campus at Mesa Junior, had a different coach. You know, that first year wrestling, I finished last place, actually, in the city tournament. So I didn't do well at all. I think I won like 3 times the entire season. But that summer, in between my freshman and sophomore year, I started looking towards the high school. And my high school coach was going to be Bobby Williams. So I started going into the high school room to train during the summertime with those guys. And, you know, what I really appreciated about Coach Williams was that he treated me like I was already a state champ or national champ from the beginning. You know, I went in there, I was just working hard, I was scrapping with these guys, didn't know much, but, you know, he was right there just with this kind of positive reinforcement. You know, I'd get beat up in a live situation, I'd come back and get a water break, and he'd say, hey, try this, hey, do this, hey, you're doing this really well. And, you know, just kind of correcting me along the way. And, you know, his strategy for me, he used to tell me, we're going to focus on your strengths and camouflage your weaknesses. And, you know, pretty much with him, it was just like going to the drawing board every single time I'd step on the wrestling mat, whether it was in practice, whether it was in competition. You know, he would find a solution for me. I'd try it. If it worked, great. We would stick with it. If it was still a problem, we'd go back to the room and we would address it until we find an answer. We found an answer. And little by little, it became a situation to where I felt like mentally I had an answer for anything my opponent would throw at me. And it also became an advantage because there was no one that could mimic my style of wrestling. I was creating something very unique with the help of my coach. Yeah. And it was all because, you know, he was focusing on the right things in my life.
God, that's all I kept thinking about when we were watching. I watched it on the plane a couple times.
Yeah, we watched your movie.
Like multiple times. And I just kept thinking, I was like, man, those disadvantages that you talked about that you had to disguise, once you work through that and they become an advantage, then you have something that no one else has. I mean, you have to see things through a completely different lens when you're walking in there anyways. I mean, to attack, you attack from a different perspective altogether. I bet your coach learned a lot too, fundamentally, of how to teach somebody.
He said he did. He said, you know, we were learning together along the way, but, you know, man, I was just grateful for him, you know, just for thinking outside the box. And, you know, in a lot of ways, he was just reinforcing what my mom was telling me on the mat, you know, so just blessed to have those people in my life to encourage me and help mold me along the way. Cause I don't know where I'd be right now without those individuals who did support me.
So let me ask you a question. How long you kept coming back? You said you took last place. When did it start to take? Like when did you start to get your rhythm? You're like, hey, I got this.
Yeah, so, you know, freshman year, last in the Mesa City Tournament. Sophomore year, I started to turn a corner. I actually finished 6th in the state of Arizona. And, you know, there is a guy in particular, his name's Chris. You know, he's one of my best friends. He was a state champ on our team. And, you know, it was Coach Williams, Chris and I, we were training all summer long, you know, in the wrestling room. Chris would drive me around Arizona to find the best high school wrestling rooms that were open, you know, that would allow us to come in and train with their guys, train with the wrestlers. And that's how I was able to speed up my trajectory in wrestling. But, you know, I remember finishing 6th in the state and I'm watching Chris compete in the finals, you know, and I'm watching him win. And it was like triple overtime. And I was so excited for him, but I started thinking, it's like, man, you know, I was spending all that time with Chris in the summer, you know, in that wrestling. I was doing every single thing that he did. Like, I can be out there. I should be out there. And, you know, my goal junior year was nothing but state champion. You know, that's what I was looking at. That's what I was focused on, is this year it's my turn, you know, to be on that podium.
And junior year is when the colleges start coming, right? That's when they start looking at you?
I mean, I wish. So, you know, my junior year, I was a state champion and ended up finishing 2nd at the high school national tournament. I was getting a little bit of looks from, you know, some smaller Division II, Division III programs, not much from D1 level. And I was kind of confused, you know, scratching my head about it. And I was like, okay, you know, I got one more year, my senior season. So when in my senior year, I repeated as a state champion in Arizona again. I was a high school national champ. And still, I was not getting the D1 offers that I expected. I had one offer from Drexel University, from Coach Childs. But other than that, the D1 programs, they They didn't reach out because I guess there was two issues with me. Number one, I wrestled 112 pounds my senior year of high school. The lightest weight class in college is 125. And so on average, you know, a college wrestler might lose 15 pounds per week. And so they saw me as basically being like, you know, 20 pounds too small, 20 pounds of muscle. And then wrestling, you know, the number two reason was wrestling for Division One. It's not like football, it's where they have a ton of scholarships to give out. For a wrestling team in college, they at that time, they had a total of about 10 full-ride scholarships for a 33-man roster. So they saw me as just being too high risk. You know, you're missing your leg, you're too small, we can't risk a scholarship on you. So, you know, I didn't get those offers that I expected to. You know, I thought they had the resume to do it and thought I proved myself, but they saw differently, I guess.
So what was the plan? I mean, if that didn't go through, what was the plan?
For me, luckily, you know, my mom, you know, she used wrestling as a big motivator for me in the classroom. So she made it a rule. She's like, all right, if you get anything lower than a B in any class, like any, if you get a C, I'm pulling you out of wrestling. And, you know, she was true to her word one time. She actually pulled me out to get my grade back up. So I graduated high school. I was at a 3.5 GPA. So academically, I was in a good standing. I could walk on somewhere. So Arizona State, I ended up walking on with a partial academic scholarship there my first year. And I wasn't on a wrestling scholarship just yet, but, you know, that was my opportunity to walk onto a D1 program to really earn a spot. You know, I did have the D1 offer from Drexel, which it was a great opportunity, but ultimately I chose to stay home and walk on Arizona State because I needed to be around my family. You know, we were going through some difficult times at home, and, you know, that's where a lot of my strength came from, was that core at home. So I didn't want to be away from them and worry about what was going on while I was away, you know, in Pennsylvania chasing a dream. So.
Is that the part in the movie when, with your, I guess, is that your dad or your stepdad that was causing some issues at home and you decided to get a job and help your mom and all of that?
Yeah. Yeah. That was the scene there. It was my former stepfather, and he'd been in my life since I was about 3 or 4 years old. I've never met my biological father, so that was my dad, you know, but unfortunately he wasn't the best role model as a man or as a dad, or a husband. And so, you know, growing up, it was a lot of instability from him. So as I got older, I really started to recognize it more and more, and you know, it just made me nervous being away from home, you know, being away from my mom, not being there in case something went wrong. And so, you know, that's really why I chose to stay home. And, you know, it was kind of weird for me because I remember, you know, I took the trip to Drexel, and, you know, just so people know, Drexel was amazing. You know, the coaches there were awesome. I loved the team. You know, they were giving me this amazing scholarship. Everything just seemed like it was the golden ticket. But, you know, I remember being there, and there was like a voice in my head. It was just really strongly just telling me, this isn't where you're supposed to be, you know. And so I ended up making that decision. You know, I need to be home. I need to be at ASU with my family. But it was difficult, you know, but ultimately I believe it was the right decision for me. And, you know, I believe it was part of God's plan, you know, to be there for my family. But also I needed them in my life too. You know, we needed to lean on each other during the storm that was going to come.
I want to talk about your mom for a lot. I mean, great woman. I'm a mama's boy too, man. When you got a good one, they're the most powerful things that you can bring to the table, man, as a good mother, hands down. So did you ever go up north to look at any of the schools, or you were dead set on Arizona?
So I checked out Drexel, and you know, the other schools that I checked out, the smaller D2, D3 programs, I took out one other trip, and Chris went to Western State, you know, in Colorado, Gunnison. So I visited there, but that was it. You know, those are the only trips I took. And you know, I signed on with ASU, and then it was kind of crazy because then, you know, once I was the starter on the team, then I started going, you know, we're traveling to compete in these different places, and I was wrestling against like my heroes, you know, my top 10 list of schools. I'm competing against them in tournaments, against them in dual meets. You know, that was a weird experience. You know, it was definitely motivating to show them what they missed. That's for sure.
So, yeah, absolutely. And good for you on doing that, by the way. So explain to me the wrestling season, how that looks from the time when you go in, you start training. What season is that, and how long does it last?
Yeah, so typically a wrestling season, you know, we'll start training in November. And, you know, for college, I think we'll have a match like late November time. And then the NCAA national tournament will be in March. It's like second week of March. So it's a long season. You know, usually during December, we're grinding out. We're doing two-a-day practices. We have multiple tournaments that we'll be going to. And, you know, just really just kind of just going at it. But, you know, the more higher level guys, you know, the nationally ranked guys, top 10, they're training year round. And that's what I was doing since I was in high school, you know, since my sophomore year of high school in the summertime. I'm training 5 days a week, year round. I might take a week off before the season starts up to kind of let my body rest up, but then it was right back to it. You know, it was just trying to find any bit of advantage that I could over my opponents, you know, just making sure I was as sharp as possible in my strength and my speed and also my technique on the wrestling mat. So pretty much year round for us.
Any ambitions to hit the Olympics?
You know, I thought about it for a little bit and I was actually training for a little while. And the thing about it is, you know, college wrestling, it's a slightly different style. We do collegiate wrestling or folk style in college and in high school. In the Olympics, it's freestyle. Right. And so it's slightly different. It's a lot more, you know, on your feet wrestling. I love wrestling on the mat. I love more, you know, control, just being able to dominate your opponents in positions. And so I was training for it. And actually, I tore my Achilles tendon during my training. And, you know, because I have only one leg, I couldn't baby it, you know, while I was healing up. So it took longer than usual to heal up. But, you know, during that time, I started looking into motivational speaking. And I started doing that kind of full time while I was recovering. And that became a passion of mine. And once I finally healed up, I kind of came to that crossroads moment where I was like, okay, I can either focus 100% on my career and speaking or go back to training. I wasn't going to do one thing halfway. So I felt like, you know, I accomplished what I wanted to at that moment in my life in wrestling. You know, I was a national champ at the time. I was like 24 years old. I was like, you know, it's time for something new. You know, I don't want to just be 50% in wrestling. I don't do that. And I feel like I would be disrespecting the sport doing that, you know, by not giving it my all. So I was ready to move on.
Let me tell you something. Your whole life has been designed for you to become a motivational speaker. Like, you can't know that as a kid. Like, no one would ever, if anybody said to me and you, is like, hey, this is what you're going to wind up being in your life. I'm like, that doesn't even make sense. It's not even on the direct path. It makes sense now when you turn around and look at it. But when we were having to go through all that, it doesn't at all. And I want to ask you this. What's your most memorable match and why?
So, you know, my most memorable match, actually, if I can give you two of them, there's two that really stand out to me. You know, one of them, it was my junior year. I made it to the quarterfinals at the NCAA tournament, and I lost to a guy that I had beaten earlier on that season. You know, it was 30 seconds left. I was beating him by, like, I think by 2 points or something. You know, I was beating him. It was close. He ended up beating me by a point. That one broke me. You know, that just completely just destroyed me mentally. I was dealing with a lot of stuff at home. And I didn't think I was going to come back my senior year. You know, that was probably the lowest point of my life up to that point. So that one was memorable for me, you know, just hitting rock bottom. But then, coming back from that, there was a couple of things that happened in my life. You know, one was the support of my family, but also I got this stack of letters from a group of third graders, which was shown in the movie. You know, they were writing me as their hero of the week. And man, that for me, it opened my eyes to where I finally understood that I was wrestling for a bigger cause and a bigger purpose than just a bracket, you know, or a medal to put on my neck. I was wrestling and I had an opportunity to show these kids who looked at me as a role model. You know, I had an opportunity to show them that, hey, you know, we all got something. You know, it can be a missing leg. It can be mental things. It can be parent issues. It can be whatever. You know, there's going to be something in life that can break you. But I wanted to show these kids how you respond to those things. You know, how do you respond to a wrestling match that you're dealing with that knocks you down? So, you know, for me, I came back more energized than ever in my senior year. Mentally, I was focused because, you know, I was going to show these kids, like, you know, it's not about the winning and losing. It's about just giving everything you got, you know, to the very end. So that match right there. But then the second one, it was definitely winning the championship, you know, because I was in front of 20,000 people. I was wrestling against the returning national champ from Iowa, and Iowa was definitely my number one school that I wanted to wrestle for coming out of high school. So, you know, wrestling against my heroes, I had a ton of respect for the coaches there. But, you know, in particular, that match, I remember specifically there was like 10 seconds left in it. And, you know, just hearing the roar of the crowd start to build up, you know, as I'm winning, you know, I'm 10 seconds, I'm just being defensive, I'm wrestling smart, just to start feeling that emotion come through me like, man, this is about to happen. Like all the ups and downs, all the struggles, you know, all those dark days, I'm about to reach the mountaintop. And that was special right there, you know, because when it got down to zero, man, all those people in the arena, the first thing I had to do was just, you know, point up and just thank God. And then also, you know, I look right at my family, the one little section up top, because those are the two things that matter most to me. And it's the only thing that matters. You know, it's your faith and your families.
This episode is brought to you by Prize Picks, and I've got to say, I've been having an absolute blast using this app. You and I make decisions every day, but on Prize Picks, being right can actually get you paid. I've already went ahead and made my picks for this week's football games. I've got to say, I am feeling very confident. The app's super clean, it's fun, and honestly, you can lock in your lineup in under a minute, super quick. I took Josh Allen for more than 270 passing yards, and I'm definitely looking at Saquon Barkley more than one rushing touchdown. Go check out the app because those projections change every week, but man, I've got to say, it just makes watching these games way more exciting. What I love is how easy it is. Just pick more or less on 2 to 6 player stat projections, and if you get your picks right, you can cash it in. It works in over 40 states, including Texas, California, and Georgia, and the payouts are very fast, safe, and secure. And here's something cool too. If one of your players gets injured in the first half and does not return, PrizePicks will protect your pick. I think that's pretty legit. Go download the app and use the code TNQ to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That is code TNQ to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. PrizePicks, it's good to be right.
That was like a Rudy moment for me on the airplane. I actually started cheering out loud for you when that happened. Look, another thing, man, you represent are those of us who can't do that. Because when you go in there, I mean, not only when it's almost because of the visual things, like, hey, he's not supposed to do that, and most people can't. And you fill both those gaps. So for those of us that sit out here that watch that sport, you see the people that are in it and they're doing, they're going out of there like, oh yeah, well, that's what they were kind of designed to do. And then it's the ones who aren't. They're the ones that captures America's hearts, right? They're the ones that motivate you to watch that just to see you put out, just to see you go hard and fast in there and beat people's ass. That's the most motivating thing about it. 100%. I mean, it's that's undeniable. I got another question for you. And I only ask the true warriors this question. I'm like, hey, man, what scares you?
Man, that's an honor to get that question. You know, I'd say what scares me is regret. Just not knowing that I gave my very best. And I'm not just talking wrestling. I'm just talking in life. You know, I'm blessed to be a husband now. I'm blessed to be a dad now. You know, I don't want to look back with regret thinking, man, I wish I would have done more. You know, man, I know I could have done better. You know, you know, for me now, my son, you know, I wasn't blessed with a great dad to look up to, you know, and I didn't really respect him. You know, he wasn't a hero for me. But my goal, I want to be a hero for my son. You know, the day, I don't know when that day is, but, you know, the day that I'm on my deathbed, you know, I don't want my son thinking, man, I wish my dad would have been around for me more. Man, you know, I wish whatever. I want my son to look up to me and say, I want to be like my dad one day. You know, so for me, my biggest fear is just not giving my best and just not to, you know, not really just counting my blessings in my life. That's something we very easily overlook. It's the simple things, you know, the everyday things. It's our family. It's those opportunities that we have. It's like we're always chasing that next big thing. We're always wishing that we had more. You know, it's like, no, you've been blessed with enough right here. You're just not focusing on it. That's what you got, and you'll be amazed. You know, so those are my two biggest fears: not doing my best and just not appreciating my blessings in my life.
Those are good ones. One thing that I took from watching the movie is, you know, people always talk about in faith that light will always drown out darkness. And with your home life, with how, you know, just troubling your stepdad was, and, you know, when I'm watching that movie, I just want to reach through the screen and strangle him. But it proves throughout your life that your mom was that light that drowned out the darkness. Because you could have easily gone a different path with how he treated you, but instead you took her motivation and her light. So I thought that's one of the biggest things that I took out of it, was just how you overcame that obstacle. Because a lot of people go through, you know, a rough family life, all with different scenarios, but how you chose that light over the darkness.
Yeah, 100%. You know, my mom, she's still to this day my hero. You know, the top of my list, that's the person I look up to the most. And She was the rock of our family, you know, just keeping us together, having these high expectations of all our kids. And just during those rough moments, you know, I remember, you know, there were times where our former stepfather was in and out. You know, he'd be around for a little bit. Things were great. And all of a sudden he'd just take off for months at a time. We wouldn't see him. We're on our own again. And, you know, there are moments I remember, you know, we're sitting around on the floor, on the couch in the living room. And my mom is just, you know, she's, you know, leading a little Bible study for us. You know, she's doing something that makes us smile. She's doing family time, you know, bringing us together. So it was always my mom, you know, no matter what the difficult time was that we were dealing with, she was always finding that positive, always finding that light to just focus in on. And now that I'm a dad, you know, now that I'm a parent and I'm older, I really appreciate that much more, you know, because going through it, it's just like, oh, mom's happy. Everything's good. Then, you know, I trust mom. But now it's like, man, I can't believe how strong she was for us growing up, you know, and I'm just so grateful for her, you know, to be that hero in my life and to have showed me so much growing up.
I've never met your mother and I'm grateful for her. She must be such a great woman that J-Lo stepped up to do that. And we're talking about a fly girl stepping in there to do that, man. I remember I was like, man, and then at the end was the best when it talks about how she overcame all that and what she has become up to this day, man. That's what you want.
Yeah.
You get tapped to one of them with a mom like that.
Yeah. She went back to school, yeah. Right?
Finished up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. My mom, yeah, she knows, cause she had me when she was young, so she didn't get a chance to go to college. But then, you know, when my former stepfather took off, she started taking part-time classes, you know, at the local community college. She had a part-time job, and little by little, man, she built herself up to where she transferred to Arizona State. She's got her bachelor's degree, her master's degree. She's over at the athletics department now at ASU. She's working with the athletic director and the higher-ups over there, and they love her. But yeah, it was just my mom. You know, I have three brothers, one sister. My mom always pushing academics on us, always saying, you know, college, you're going, you know, it's not a maybe, it's a must. You're doing it, you know. And so just her high expectations of us and of herself, you know, she's the best coach I could have ever asked for in my life. She lived it.
That's awesome.
I bet how's she like being a grandma?
She loves it. You know, she's got, let's see, 11 total grandkids.
Oh my
now.
God.
Girl. Yeah.
Yeah. 11 grandkids. And, you know, man, she's living a life. That's for sure. And you know, you mentioned J-Lo and, you know, just a blessing to have the film, you know, because not only is it my life story, it was my family's life story, you know, it was my mom's perspective and what she dealt with. And so, you know, I was just so grateful for Artist Equity and Amazon to really capture her side of the story, you know, and to show her struggles and what she went through. And then for J-Lo, you know, everyone knows who she is. You know, she could have easily just taken the script and be like, all right, I'm going to do it my way. But she really, like, through the whole process, she stayed close to my mom and she really found out the little details that make my mom my mom. You know, she captured things and she actually added things into the film to where it wasn't initially in the script, but it was things that my mom shared with her personally that she wanted to make sure was out there so people could really see who she was. So, you know, I'm just glad people got to see my mom in the light that I see her. You know, Jennifer captured it on the screen.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, she's straight up badass.
When you were when the movie was being filmed, what was the one thing that you hoped people would take out of it when they watched it?
I think that the two biggest things is, you know, I wanted people to see that where my strength came from, you know, despite the things that I was wrestling with on the mat, you know, the people and everything else, it was my faith and my family, you know, and I believe it did a beautiful job of capturing both of those things, you know, of showing that family support from my siblings, from my mom, and, you know, my coaches, you know, were also family to me, and also just that faith part of it, you know, just the ups and downs, and just, there was an ultimate plan, and that scene at the end of the match, you know, just pointed up. You know, I'm just grateful that our director, Billy Goldenberg, he put that in there, you know, and that was just so much fun to be a part of that whole process because, you know, they brought me on as the stunt double. So I was doing all the wrestling scenes with Jarrell and, you know, they wanted to capture that moment perfectly. So that was kind of surreal, you know, just like a full circle moment and just going back there to film that was just crazy. But, you know, it was all part of the plan.
That was going to be my question is that's good. They had you on set and you are happy with it. You seem it was a great movie.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm very happy with it. You know, and you know, I remember, you know, I won my title and we were getting phone calls pretty much right away from production companies that were interested in telling my life story. And it was exciting, but at the same time, it was terrifying because it's like, all right, how are they going to tell the story? You know, is this going to be something that I recognize when it finally comes out? You know, I've heard scary stories about people who have their lives shared and they Hollywoodize it too much. You know, it's where it's unrecognizable, and we didn't want that. You know, so we took our time, you know, with the whole process. We wanted to make sure it was the right group of people, and you know, it all came together. You know, I remember just with our director Billy. You know, he flew out here to Arizona. He had dinner with my family and I. Just a super humble, down to earth guy, and he's like, you know, I just want to make your family proud of how your story's told. And then, you know, same thing with sitting down with Ben Affleck. You know, it was no like, oh, I've done all these things. It was just, hey, you know, you let me know what you're happy with. You let me know what makes you uncomfortable. Through this whole process, we want you involved. If there's not anything you don't like, you come directly to me and we'll change it. And he was true to that. You know, every single script revision that we had, you know, they'd send it to us and I'd sit it there with my family. We'd read it. We'd come back to the dinner table and we'd discuss it. And we would make sure, okay, we are comfortable with this. You know what? We don't like this. And we give those notes back and they would make their adjustments. So, you know, there were some things that, you know, for artistic creativity, for timing, stuff like that, they had to adjust, but you know, there wasn't anything major. And, you know, it was just something at the end of the day, my family and I, we were super happy with how it turned out. You know, it was surreal just sitting in the theater, watching it for the first time, you know, the finished product, like, wow, this is our life right here. You know, it was crazy.
Next question. What was it like watching it for the first time?
So we saw like a rough cut. I think it was like maybe October. Billy flew out to Arizona. He rented out a theater. And it was just for him and my family and I to watch it. And he's like, hey, you know, we're almost done with it. There's still a lot of editing that needs to be done, but I want you guys to see it to make sure you're comfortable. He's like, you know, if there's any notes, let's put them in now. Let's change it right now. So this is for you guys. So, you know, my family and I watched it and we absolutely loved it. But to see like the final finished product was actually, it was in Toronto at the Toronto Film Festival.
Yep.
And, you know, I remember being out there. It was my mom, my wife and I, and, you know, we're in the theater and, you know, I'm sitting next to, you know, Jennifer's like over my left shoulder. Jarrell's right next to my mom. And, you know, we're watching it and, you know, my mom is on one side of me and my wife's on the other. And they kept like elbowing me because they're like, they nailed you right there. You know, my mom squeezing my hand through the whole movie. And I remember at the very end of it, when the credits rolled, they actually put a spotlight on my family. And I'm not a big crier, you know, usually, but man, like that moment right there, it just hit me like a wave, like all the emotions. I just like, I couldn't hold it in. You know, I was just bawling my eyes out and my mom was crying and, you know, we're getting a standing ovation. And it was just a blessing. You know, it's like, you never want to go through the struggles. I hated it. You know, there were plenty of times in my life where I wished I had another leg, where I wished things were different. But man, you know, I'm just looking back now, I'm so grateful to have gone through those challenges because it made me stronger. You know, movie stuff aside, it's made me a better person. It's made me a stronger person mentally. And it's also made me someone who can, you know, sympathize with others who are going through similar things and I can help people, you know, like people have helped me. So, you know, but to have this movie, man, it was special to see the finished product.
You're a true definition of a wrestler. Not only on the mat, but the life that you had to deal with, you had to wrestle with all that. It's like life in general is your opponent. And you're a beacon of light for everybody who looks at you. I couldn't even, I mean, watching that movie, sit there, you're over there cheering for the actor playing you. Like, hey man, they're talking about you. That's you're doing that cheer for yourself, man. That's something.
I cried during it. Yeah, it was a really, really great movie and just shows how good your family is. And I love it. However, we can support you. And
yeah, there's a bunch of movies going on inside your film.
Yeah.
The way they capture the family life and then the training part. That's my favorite. Anytime they show a movie about badasses, it's when they're training. Like when they had you running up that mountain.
Yes, I was just about to say that.
That was a good one.
I was so mad at the coach when you were going up the mountain and he was just being a dick. And I'm like,
that's what coaches do. The good ones anyways.
Hey, no mercy.
That's right.
Golly. Were your coaches there with you or were they able to see
it? My coaches were able to come out to the Arizona premiere. It was just my mom, my wife, and I that flew out to the Toronto Film Festival. But, you know, and that was really special because the Arizona premiere, that was when, you know, our family and friends were able to come out and actually see it for the first time and celebrate with us. And, you know, so that was just kind of full circle moment, you know, to see them, you know, to have them see what they had a part in making, you know, in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Was very special.
I bet.
You know, and I'm grateful for my kids. They encouraged me just like my mom did. And you know, once they got to know me and realized I didn't want any special treatment, you know, they didn't treat me any differently. You know, so everything my teammates did, they expected me to do too. And they encouraged me to find a way to do it.
It's so awesome.
So now you're on the lecture series. Talk about that. How, are you enjoying that part of it? Give me a little reflection on that.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I'm having a blast right now. I'm on the speaking circuit. You know, I'm traveling the country as a motivational speaker, and you know, get to speak to various different types of groups of all sizes, of all ages, and that's been amazing. My message is it's the same. You know, it's that word unstoppable, and then it's the fact that we all wrestle with a challenge. You know, we all wrestle something. It's physical, mental, life in general can just be one big challenge, one big opponent. You know, but it's always going back to what my mom taught me. You know, you never let your challenge become your excuse. You treat life like a puzzle. You know, sometimes you got to find different pieces. Sometimes you got to change things up, but you can change it up. You can make it work. You know, you just have to have that commitment and just have that faith that little by little, you'll find the answers. You know, you'll have the solution that'll be put in your path, but you just got to keep working towards it. You know, it's got to be earned, you know, every single day. And it just kind of goes back to what my trainer used to tell me all the time. It's like, you know, he'd say, if you are unchallenged and you are unchanged. You know, every single day I go into practice, you got to challenge yourself in the weight room. You got to challenge yourself on the wrestling mat. You know, step outside of your comfort zone. If you do that, you get stronger, you get better. But if you don't, you're not changing. You're just staying where you're at. And that's not a way to live your life.
That's a great saying.
Yeah. And you don't have a message. You are the message.
Yeah.
100%.
Thank you.
If I could give you any piece of advice on the lecture series, enjoy every venue. Enjoy the people you're with. Because it's different when you're walking in who you are now. But like you truly get to enjoy. And my point with that is it starts going so fast. And there's so many of them. They start stacking up. You kind of lose track of it. I would try to keep the hotel. One year I kept every hotel key.
Well, as a back note, Marcus has been doing.
I've been at this for a minute.
Yeah, he's been doing this motivational speaking since 2007. So it's been a while.
It's going to get chaotic for you. Okay, because the better you get, it's a never-ending message with you. Like I said, you are the message. So remember to have fun. I mean, the minute it starts to wear down on you, back up a little bit, take a deep breath and get back in there, man. But it's you're changing lives. So it's important that you can feel that. And I wouldn't want you to ever have to lose that part of it.
Yeah.
For sure, man. You earned it.
It's a blessing, man. Thank you. Yeah, and that's my favorite part. I know my story. I've lived it. But, you know, to be out there on the stage and, you know, just to see the look on the audience face when I'm saying something that's really hitting home, you know, and then I really just start, you know, going into that direction even further, you know, because it's having that impact. And that's what it's about. You know, it's great to reach our goals, but it's just as important, you know, if not more important, to help others reach theirs as well. You know, it's about giving back and making this world a better place. So
that's awesome.
Well, you've dumped so much wisdom on us already, but I always ask this, what's some of the wisdom that you say to yourself that keeps you going that you could pass on that you've learned up till now? It's usually short and sweet and has a real good punch.
Like a mantra.
Yeah, your mantra.
Me, it's unstoppable. You know, that's my mantra. Every single day I'm unstoppable. I'm going to find a way to get the job done. And, you know, I chase greatness, you know, and for me, greatness is not measured by trophies. It's not measured by always getting first place. It's just knowing you gave your very best, you know, and all that you do, you walk off that mat, win or lose. If you know you gave it everything you had, that's greatness right there. You know, that's your maximum level. You got to celebrate that. And that's a victory.
Thank you for that.
That's good. How can our listeners help you or see you speak or follow you?
My website's just my name. It's anthonyrobles.com. So people can reach out to me on there. And you know, my social media, I'm on Instagram. It's at arobles125. So I'm always posting on there and been blessed. You know, just enjoying the speaking circuit right now. And I'm also a high school wrestling coach back here in Arizona. So I'm keeping busy.
Going to be my last question is, are you ever thinking about coaching? So that's great that you're doing that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. The season's coming up in November. We got my Hamilton High School wrestling team. We got a good team building right now. So, you know, the kids are tough. They're putting in the work. And, you know, I'm enjoying molding this next generation, you know, of youth that are coming through. So
that is so cool.
But what about your kids? This will be my last question. Being who you are and have accomplished what you've accomplished, do you push that on your kid? Because it's all around them. I mean, they see it every time they walk in the door. Do you push that on them, or do you kind of step back and let them and watch where they're going to go and then lean in? Are any of them wrestlers?
That's a good question. So right now, you know, my wife and I, we only have one son. His name's Abel. He's 2.5 years old. You know, he's already in the wrestling room with me now, though. You know, I got a kids club that I teach in, so he's in there running around with the kids, tackling them. But, you know, I thought about it. You know, as he grows up, you know, am I going to force this on him, or am I going to let him pick his own path? And, you know, for me, of course, I'm going to introduce it to him, you know, as he grows up. You know, I'm going to try to put him in the room with me. But if he decides on something else, you know, if he decides to be, he's going to be a soccer player, I'll be the biggest soccer fan for him. You know, if he decides he wants to be an artist, you know, I'll be his biggest fan right there. You know, my goal in his life is, you know, I'm the coach in his corner. You know, he's got to wrestle the match. He's got to pick the mat that he wants to be on. I'm just going to be there chanting and cheering for him and you know, giving him advice along the way. So I hope, you know, I hope that he gets into wrestling. I think he's got the temperament for it already, you know, because I think that'd be a special bond for us to be able to go on that journey together. But man, no matter what, I'm just going to be like my mom was for me. You know, I'm my biggest fan in the crowd, and I'll be cheering for him no matter what.
Last question, and how can we follow your mother? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Hey, we all need to go to school at ASU, man.
Yeah. Tell your mom.
Yeah, tell her. Thank you for all that she's done and for raising a good man, for sure.
Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, we hope to meet you in person one day, and we're just proud to be able to have this moment with you. Thank you.
Absolutely. Been honored to meet y'all in person. And thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, that was awesome.
All right, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was an honor to meet you, man. Thank you for your time, brother. And God bless you, man.
Yeah, thank you.
You as well. It's truly a pleasure to speak with you both. Y'all have a good one.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture. Luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.